You're talking about focusing on individuals instead of subjects.
In other words, if you're talking about, let's talk about financial planning, all right?
Okay.
Well, if I'm talking about how important financial planning is to you, Marty, that's subject matter. If I say, Marty, it's important to me that the effort you expend every 10-hour day that you work for the next 20 years gives you the greatest outcome, gives you the chance to have the greatest joy out of your life, gets you the chance for you, Marty, to have the security, gives you and your wife the chance to do everything you want, to live in the house you want, to have the comfort levels you want, to take the trips you want, to have the security you want. Does that make sense? It's a big difference.
Well, it's a massive difference.
One subject matter and one is individual. One is basically saying, I'm tying this into your specific situation now and in the future. Everything I'm doing is focused on what it means to you transactionally, not generically. Generically is subject matter. Transactionally is your life.
I guess the thing that has surprised me in talking with you is that I think there's kind of a mass perception that people in marketing don't care about people. What is grossly surprising is, as I understand the J. Abraham view of life and view of business, you're more concerned about the individual than people could imagine.
Well, for two reasons. Self-servingly, if I don't or won't or wouldn't be, I would get so little joy out of it that I would be as apathetic and as burned out as everybody else, and my success level would falter. I mean, most of the people you're talking about aren't that successful, and they're loathed, and they live. I mean, if you live for retirement, why do anything that gives you no joy? Why invest the largest part of your waking day and your human capital investment and your financial investment in something that gives you less joy than you're entitled to? I think you got to be able to find the ultimate passion, the ultimate fulfillment, the ultimate excitement out of every hour you spend in life, and that can't happen unless you got a higher and better purpose. You got to help the individual through mastery of the subject matter by helping school them on the purpose so they can think better. They got to see the purpose something has to their specific life. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Most people don't. And as I just told you, if I tell you, Marty, you got to have financial planning, that doesn't get you excited. If I say, Marty, if you have the chance this week to expend effort, and that effort could produce $10,000 for you, and if you do it right, that $10,000, seven of it could remain in your bank account. Now, that seven, if you do it right, it could produce, in the course of any 10-year period, it could buy you a house three times as much and have it paid for, and you could have another business that would throw off another $7,000 a week for life for you, and that's a different strategy, but it takes no more time, no more effort, just a different approach than you're doing now. That's a lot more exciting than saying, Marty, you got to do financial planning.
I'll grant you that. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So keep in mind, when you're communicating with a customer or a prospect, you're only talking to them a very short period of time. Your goal is to be the liberator. If you think through history, political history particularly, almost everyone who liberated a populace was exalted. They were rewarded. They were heralded. They were installed as president. They became enriched, weren't they?
Yes.
George Washington was. I'm sure in a lot of foreign countries, the liberators were. They were, you know, and so your goal is to become the liberator of people's awareness of what is possible, of what they can give themselves, of how much more of a result or outcome they can get out of a transaction.
All right.
Okay. And when you do that, it's a shift in perspective that all of a sudden opens up all kinds of new solutions and possibilities you can render to people.
Okay.
By approaching your business as coming up with alternative points of view that the normal people in your industry would never entertain, by looking at things in behalf of your customers in an unconventional way, you help people find liberty or liberation. And this all comes from helping them look at life and at their business, at the implications, in very different ways than everybody else would have them do, or is content to do, or has learned to do. You want to be a liberator. When problems get solved for people, revelations occur. Have you ever noticed that? when I help you solve a dilemma or a problem by giving you a better explanation or a better solution, normally a revelation occurs. It's no longer frustrating. You're no longer mystified. You have power over it, and that's revelational for you.
All right, yeah, I understand that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I
if I've done my job correctly, Marty, on these interviews, it is very empowering. It's explaining to you and connecting dots on the reason why other people are so much more successful than you might be in a transaction, or why certain people get greater results from doing things than you have, and why you could too. And it's very liberating, and it should be very enlightening, very illuminating, and very revelational, because it gives you power.
Mm-hmm.
Trite but true. Knowledge is power. You're giving people this knowledge. You're empowering people. When they're empowered, they trust you because they trust their liberator, their creator, so to speak. You've created their awareness. Does that make sense?
Yes.
A little bit esoteric, but a very powerful distinction that everyone should recognize, because that explains the dynamism of what goes on.
Okay.
But when you do this, you make people all of a sudden very comfortable with a lot of things, issues, subjects, topics, areas that in the past they were very intimidated by. You can take people to a much higher level of involvement, interest, discussion, possibility, commitment than they'd ever allowed themselves before, because you've demystified it for them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it does.
You've extended your knowledge and understanding of key business or key life issues and transformed or translated or transferred your knowledge through the torque conversion of this explanatory basis I overviewed in this and in the previous session. You've given the customer prospect a way that they have power, and they feel more comfortable, and they have feel more in control, because now they understand the implications, the method to the madness, the interreaction, the interrelationships of things.
I did not understand that, in essence, whenever a customer comes into my store, or however I encounter my prospect or potential customer, they're actually in some form experiencing a disorder in their lives. Something's out of control.
Well, doesn't that make sense?
Yes, yes.
And your goal is to give them this confidence, this total control. You don't want to control them. You want them to feel like they're controlling you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not ego, and it's not pride, it's respect. Respect for the feelings and the way their minds work, and understanding that if you help them get what they want, they'll give you more of what you want.
Now, in Company X, did the entire staff understand all of this? And this
they were an incredible, integrated machine. They all understood, articulated, demonstrated, manifested, sustained, and perpetuated this philosophy in everything they did, internally and externally, from their communications, their ads, their letters, their sales presentations, to the way the phone was answered, to the way problems were solved, to the way customer service was dealt, to the way they hired people, to the way they dealt with people internally, to the way they dealt with vendors. Yes.
Okay.
It was an integrated process.
Okay.
Okay, keep in mind, the difference between your company and all your competitors should be, from this point forward, you are totally focused on the individual. You have fallen in love with your prospect, not your product. When you're interacting with them in any form, on the phone, in a letter, in person, in your offices, in your store, in your retail, in your order department, it's you and your customer have an opportunity of being together for a few minutes or for an hour, and your challenge has got to be how much value, how much benefit, how much contribution can you make to them in that period? So it's got to be predicated on a three-pronged understanding. Number one, you have to give them constantly great advice. Number two, you must be able to express that advice well, and well doesn't mean eloquent. Well means clear and compellingly. There's an old story about two orators in ancient Greece. One was silver-tongued, and they were trying to rouse the populace to fight an impending infidel who was encroaching on the borders. And the silver-tongued man spoke, and when he was done speaking, everyone said, oh, what an eloquent and wonderful speech. The other man wasn't as eloquent, but he emphasized and advocated and championed the feelings, the desires, the point of view of the populace. He was awkward, and he was rough behind the edges, and he was anything but smooth, but he was sincere and connected and totally externally focused. When he was done, they said, let's march. So you got to realize what you want is not to be said, wow, what a great salesman, or what a great presentation. You want people to say, I didn't know that. I absolutely want that for myself. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
And you must want to express it. You've got to be able to express it from their point of view, then you must want to express it with this conviction and commitment to make them the focal point of everything you do, because your goal has got to be to constantly provide better, more enriching, and enrichment doesn't just mean financial, it means on all gradients of enrichment, solutions to your customers' problems. Keep in mind, most people spend their entire lives getting only a fraction of the yield they can out of their endeavors. That goes for you, the business owner, but it more goes for your customer. They deny themselves so much more outcome they could get from the same or less effort. Your challenge, your obligation, your commitment, your gift, your wonderful opportunity is to help them get so much more out of everything they do. That's pretty much it, Marty.
All right. How about a three-sentence J. Abraham Wizard summary of the strategy for preeminence?
Okay. Understand and empathize with where your prospect and customer is coming from on every gradient you can identify, financially, emotionally, and not just in the limited constraints of the transactional area you're dealing with, but in the more global or totalistic or holistic essence of their lives. Number two, be committed to producing and rendering great advice and putting their interest ahead of yours. Number three, fall in love with them, not the product or service. Number four, always be individually focused, not generically product focused. Number five, always demonstrate and show them. Don't just tell them. Let them into the method to your madness, the reason why, the intricacies that bring something to it. Liberate them. Give them control. Don't control them. Don't deny them the opportunity to buy more and more often, because in doing so, most often you limit their ability to get a greater outcome for themselves and you owe them more. And respect them. That's it.
All right. Now, can I jam your brain on fast forward?
Yes.
I think as I first heard about the Wizard's Edge, as you think about those of us listening to the tape and thinking about your abilities, how in the world do you find good ideas? You're a wizard at doing that.
Well, I can tell you how you find or create ideas in a nutshell. They're new combinations of old things in new ways. What you got to do is discipline yourself to do a couple of things. Number one, you've got to constantly be aware of all aspects of transactional life. That's a little confusing. You got to be aware and constantly look at what's going on. And you got to look at new associations, how things interreact or interrelate.
Okay, can I pretend like I'm on a telephone with you consulting?
Yes.
And I have a particular business. What are you going to do as I describe my business?
Thing I want to do is learn two things. What you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, what you're not doing. Who your customer is, what they want, what you sell, how you sell it, whether you're selling it or whether you're selling its result, what the result is, how the result can be denominated, what your competitor is doing, what they're not doing, what advantage you might have that your competitor either doesn't or doesn't utilize, what the basis for buying is predicated on right this moment. Basically, how many ways we can take your product from a commodity where you have no advantage to a proprietary where you have all the advantage. I want to see how much risk is involved in the transaction on the part of the customer and on the part of you. And I want to see what the predictable result or performance elements of using your product or applying your product or accomplishing or utilizing or buying your product is for the end user. And I want to know how we can denominate that and how we can take that denomination and put it into a guarantee or a risk reversal. I want to know how we can reward you for taking the risk, how we can lower the barrier of entry and make it easier instead of harder. That's pretty much it.
All right. Can I talk to you about a strategy that you've used a lot, follow up with telemarketing?
Sure.
It's been immensely successful for the people you've had use that.
Well, there's a flaw and a fallacy in the way most business owners look at communication. They don't realize, they delude themselves to think when they send a letter out to somebody that somebody's got nothing else to do in their life but stop everything, read that letter. If the letter's not written well or confusing or it's not as telegraphing of the self-serving result, work hard to figure out what's in it for them, understand it all, take immediate action, stop everything, respond. In the reality of life, three things happen. Half the letters that are sent don't get received. Half the letters that get received don't get read. Half the letters that get read don't get acted on, not because people aren't interested, but because people's lives are so complex, so prevailed upon. There's so many day-to-day catastrophes, crises, imperatives that prevail upon us that we defer, we procrastinate, we put aside things that aren't instantly critical, even though we might have incredible interest. And ask yourself, how many times have you been impacted by an ad, a letter, an offer, something in the mail that you actually had very strong interest in, but you weren't compelled to take interest this very moment? You either said, I'm going to go down there, I'm going to call them, and you either put it aside or you mentally put it aside, and the freneticism and the chaos and the diversion in your life occurred to such a level you forgot totally about it?
Yeah, sometimes I think it's amazing I act on anything.
So what we've learned is that whenever you make a letter or a mailing or any formal communication, even a sales call, if you go behind it and follow it up with a telephone call with an intelligent person calling behind saying, Marty, I sent you a letter. I know you're busy. I'm calling for a number of reasons. First, did you get the letter? If you got the letter, did you understand that the letter basically told you that we realize you're not getting the fullest benefit you can out of such and such, and we've put together a way you can do this by offering you such and such, and we want you to consider doing this, not for us, but for you, because if you do this, it can increase your blank by blank percent or by this degree. And that's not just idle words. We've observed in all our other customers that the average customer, when they do this, gets a blank time improvement in what they're doing. And we want that so badly for you that we made you an offer that you could try it out in your home or in your business for the next 15 days for no risk. And we've even reduced the cost and added to it the following benefit. And we want to make absolutely certain, because it's a limited offer, we don't have enough of them for all our customers, that you particularly got the letter, recognized it, understood the advantage, and had the fullest opportunity to take advantage of it before we run out, because we know the quality of improvement it'll make to your blank. Now, if you don't want to, that's fine, Marty. I'm just calling. I want to make sure you understood. I want to make sure you knew that it's a risk-free proposition. I want to make sure you knew that if at all we're right, it'll increase or improve the quality of your blank by such and such, or reduce the blank. That's pretty powerful, isn't it, Marty?
Well, it is. Can you talk about maybe some of your case histories or just a few
examples?
Yeah, I
can tell you a simple example.
Okay.
I have a former client who's a software company in Oklahoma, and they sell to schools a scholastic academic-based software that's many thousands of dollars. They did a mailing recently that did okay. It made money. I gave them a lecture for about a half hour on doing this. They decided to do it because I embarrassed and cajoled them into doing it. They called behind and found that tons of the teachers were interested, but they had questions that weren't asked. They had a little bit of fear that were overcome by some risk reversal. They wanted to know if it would apply to their situation because it wasn't clear. And by overcoming those four key points, they added 800% or eight times the sales to what they had done just by the letter. They made so much money that they celebrated and took every one of their staff to Hawaii for a week because they were so successful. I have another client that did a mailing that didn't work at all, and I looked at it and thought it was too conceptual and too abstract, and it wasn't an immediate response type thing. I asked them to get on the phone and follow behind and dimensionalize it and answer questions and summarize what the letter said, and they made hundreds of thousands of dollars by doing that. I have a client that does millions of dollars a year in business because he first sends a letter that just basically is designed to break even and position people so that when his very skilled selling team can go behind, they have a receptive audience that has been, the barrier has been broken. they're familiar with the concept. They've been introduced to it. It has credibility, but that's all they see the letter as being, is the credibility builder and the first beachhead to break the resistance barrier, not to sell anybody.
Can you articulate just a few points on how to make these calls so that they're well-received?
Yes. First of all, don't ever do them before. Always do them after a letter. Second, always respect the person and tell them the reason why you're making the call. And the reason why is for 3 points. Number one, to make sure they got it. Number two, to make sure they understood it. Number three, to make sure they realized what the implications of the offer was to them. And you might add number four, to recognize and be certain they understood that you've offered them a way to avail themselves of this, get an outcome, get a result on a risk-free basis, and reiterate what the risk-freeness is, and give them a chance to give you a commitment and take action over the phone, or at least to get the to go to the next step. Try to make it easy to lower the barrier of entry. By that, I mean give them the chance. If they can't take or make the fullest commitment, don't say, okay, I'll call you later. Ask them to take at least an interim commitment, to let you send them something, let you try something out, let you talk to somebody, do something to keep going forward. Always respect them. Always encounter, always effect or transact the telephone communication in the context and with the reverence to the fact it is an informative, valuable service. You're not trying to sell. You're trying to do something that will enhance their lives, and you have an obligation to make sure they understand how, why, and that advantage is evident to them, and to do everything in your power to make it possible.
As I think about this telemarketing back-end approach, communication opportunities are so geometrically more than
it is if you look at it as not an onerous and intimidating selling situation, but a wonderful opportunity for you to add value by helping inform, educate, and advise somebody. When you look at it that way, and you have an obligation to them, not only a responsibility, but a necessary certainty to bring this opportunity and this awareness to them for their benefit, not yours. Whether they buy or not is not important. That they know that it will change the quality and the satisfaction of their life and protect them and make living or make their business or make their transactions more productive is important for you to communicate.
Is there any way to set up the mailing piece or other contact points so that the telephone campaign might even be better?
Sure. The mailing piece should acknowledge them as being valuable. It should be one-on-one written. It should basically be empathic. It should tell them, start with the result they could get, tell them, give them a reason why they can get that result, give them some background, give them some details, follow the same basic essence element that I just detailed in the earlier part of this session and the session that preceded it. It should basically prove any claims you make in a way they can embrace by letting them in on a reason why, making a case. It should tell them what they should expect the improvement or the result to their life to be. It should tell them why they owe it to themselves to at least learn more or try it out. It should show them why they can try it out without risk. It should tell them what they should do to try it out without risk. It should give them a way they could contact you or take action now, but it should assure them that if they're not comfortable or ready to take action now, you as a courtesy are going to follow up just to make sure they understood, to answer any questions, to tell them about other people that have done it, and to give them a chance to take advantage without fear, risk, and without obligation.
As people apply your strategies, what is the most typical response you get back in terms of frustration? Because I can't believe that everyone that goes to a conference or consults with you immediately has
The biggest frustration, Marty, I'm stepping on you, but I understand that where you're taking it, and I want to be respectful of the limited time we've got. The biggest frustration that I experience from people, they don't always execute properly. They don't realize that everything doesn't work perfectly in the beginning, and they got to work at it. And I draw an analogy and say, well, did you ever take up sports or a hobby? I mean, do you do any kind of sports, Marty?
I've played just about every sport that you could do.
What are you the best at? What are you the very best at?
Probably table tennis.
Okay. How long have you been playing table tennis?
Roughly 30 years.
Okay. Could you go back 30 years, and I don't know your current age, but can you go back 30 years to when you were a young boy?
Okay.
And tell me when the first time you picked up a paddle and a ping pong ball, whether you were expert status? I mean, did you return every one? Did you, you know, play an A player? Did you serve aces every time? Did they all go over the net? Could you return everything? Could you put spin on it? Could you put reverse on it? Could you do all that stuff the first time or the second?
Actually,
or the third?
I did a pretty good job just to hold the paddle.
Okay, well, same thing. It's when people take up weightlifting, if they want to, they want to look like Hercules, and they normally can't lift 10 pounds. And a lot of people give up because they're exasperated. They aren't expert in the beginning. It's a process. And you got to realize, including adopting my techniques and my philosophies, it took most of you 30 years, 40 years, 20 years, your adult life, to get where you are and to cultivate and become proficient at your bad habits, or to become adroit at doing things in an inept or a sub-optimized way. You've got to work a little bit and get comfort and get proficient and get more expert at doing things, and that requires experimenting with execution. So you should never put all your eggs in one basket and put mortgage the house on anything you try. You should do everything in little, non-threatening, inexpensive, non-dangerous tests, because they aren't all going to work. Not because the philosophies aren't powerful and invincible, but because your execution in the beginning may not be perfect. It's a process. You keep trying.
Okay, talk just a little bit about the test, because that's key in your philosophy, and I don't think most of us do that.
Marty, everything in the world can be improved. You can gain proficiency by testing or by comparing one approach to another. And people basically unintentionally have probably used the concept of subconscious testing to get wherever they are in life, because whatever they do, probably they do not because they do the best, but because whatever they're doing is the best way they've found to get whatever results they're getting. Whatever they do with their kids, whatever they do with their wife, whatever they do in their job, however they perform, if they have kept at it and do it relatively well and they keep making money at it, it's probably because whatever they do now is the best tested way they have found to perform that function or that communication or that transaction. When you test, if you test one approach against another, one proposition against another, one way of doing something against another, one way of articulating something against another, one way of positioning something against another, one price against another, one presentational approach against another, one package or combination of products or service against another, one risk reversal articulation against another, one hot button or premise against another or positioning, you will find that invariably one will outperform the other by a margin. The margin can be 10%, and in many cases it can be 2,000%, 20 times difference. When you constantly test multiple ways of doing something, you will always find a higher and better way of doing it. You owe it to yourself first and foremost to always optimize, and that means doing the highest job of performance you can from the least amount of effort. That only is evident by testing. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense, but you know better probably than anyone else. Most of us want to operate off of instinct.
Well, let me tell you the price you pay. The price you pay for conjecture, which is what happens when you don't test and when you just basically blindly and unilaterally do something because it's what you want to do or it feels right, is you lose opportunity. If you're content to realize or be paid or earn a third or a fourth of what you're entitled to, if you're content with having three or four times the frustration level, if you're content with ending up at the end of your work career with a fraction of what you could in money, in achievement, in net worth of the business, in health, if you're content with having every day be a fraction as enjoyable and as purposeful as it could be, you are very welcome to not test. It's your prerogative. It's a free world. This is America, land of opportunity, land of your own decisions.
What made you want to start testing yourself, or have you always done this?
I studied masters, people who made 10 times what other people doing something did, people who worked half the day but made four times the money as others, people who always smiled, people everybody respected, people who got joy out of life, and I studied what they did, and they were fanatical scientists of the testing mechanism. Science, every great discovery is a form of testing. And when they test, scientists don't content themselves with one result. They start, that's the base. They try to get improve upon it, get something that works better, that's more effective, more powerful. You owe yourself to be a life-based research scientist.
Okay, Jay, we have about 9 minutes left, and I don't know if this is fair to you or not. You tell me, is it possible for you to summarize the letter that you share with people? There is an architectural firm that practiced this strategy of preeminence, I think, in a way.
They did, yes.
I know you can't excerpt the all of the letter in 9 minutes. Can you summarize how these people worked? Because architectural firms sometimes are pretty staid.
Yeah, I'll try to give you at least a couple key points. First of all, they believe that everybody's business is basically a mirror of the very soul of the owner. And the owner's reflecting what they are as a human being, what they feel for others, their passion levels. And you got to realize that. It comes smackingly clear to everybody that works for you and that everybody you impact and everyone you try to deal with. They have an enormous respect for the dignity of human beings. They appeal to a person's dignity and they feel like they touch it. And they find when they do that, people respond back in a very dignified and respectful manner. So they have enormous respect for the intelligence and the value of humanity and mankind in the form of their employees, in the form of their suppliers, in the form of the people that they deal with. And let's see, when they respect them, they respect also the right people have to spend their money anywhere. They respect the right people have to excellent value and performance for what they do and what they spend money and commitment to. They respect people's rights to learn everything they can about the options available and everything they can about what's best for them. They respect people's rights to like or not like what this company does for them, and they are very mindful of the fact that they basically are in business to serve and provide the betterment of their customer, not for the customer to provide their betterment. Although if they do serve the betterment of their customer, the customers are normally very inclined to serve the betterment of this company.
I want to hear about them taking the customers shopping.
Well, it's pretty interesting. They basically feel like it's important. It's an architectural firm, and they do things like no other architects. They take all their customers shopping for all the fixtures. They take them. They spend 20 hours. They invest with them. They make certain that part of that time they sit down and they bond with them at a very long, respectful, very intimate luncheon or dinner with them where they learn all about their hopes, their dreams, then they listen. And I'm going to make a point that I may have said in one of our earlier sessions or not. One of the greatest lessons I learned about life and connecting with people is that most people operate their whole philosophy on gaining popularity and being liked on an erroneous basis. People think that what the goal is to be interesting, and yet all you have to do to own people's hearts forever is be genuinely interested in them and learn to listen with respect and interest and a genuine commitment and curiosity and sense of wanting to know and learn and discover. It's real simple. It's real simple, Marty. But when these people take people shopping, they constantly learn and discover and listen to them, and it's a wonderful bonding process. They think listening is the key to everything they do. And when they listen, they don't just listen. They communicate to the people after they've had any meetings that they've listened, and they share with them what they think they've heard in a respectful manner so the people know that it was important. And they didn't just patronize them. They send them notes that summarize what they heard. They have long philosophies on listening, and they think listening is a translation. If you listen, it means you respect somebody. And you can't listen if you don't respect them, so it's important that you respect them. And in the course of their business, they never talk disparaging about any client behind their back. They always talk with respect and admiration and empathy for every client and everything they talk about with everybody in and around their business.
Tell the story about them, the architectural firm, listening to these people, and then when they actually end up building a model of the house.
Well, okay, it's very interesting. They hear and they make copious notes and they respond to that. But if somebody says, for example, whenever they're ready to build the house, the customer doesn't even know they're going to do it. They spend a not inconsequential amount of money and they build an exact 2-replica, 2-foot by approximately 4-foot model of the home. And they put cars in the driveway and people in the yard, and they adorn it with items and intricacies that manifest or personify what they've heard these people say is important to them. For example, there'd be a dog, if they have a dog, that he'd be children by the barbecue or on the swings or in the pool. One time they had a customer that told that his dream was to own a Mercedes convertible and a Harley Davidson, and they put a Mercedes convertible in the drive and a Harley Davidson in the garage. And they just connect with people at a level that's incredible. And they really get a lot out of it. They really and truly take joyous delight in bringing people's dreams to life.
And the other thing I have to ask you to comment on is how one couple couldn't afford the whole package, and as they worked through this, they actually ended up saving some of the business.
They did. The people weren't going to use them because they were too expensive, and they showed people that they could take a couple of the processes away, and they showed them why it wouldn't be critical to the outcome, and that those processes could be added at a later date if their finances or their desires offered, and they showed them that if what they wanted was this outcome, they would be doing themselves a disservice by compromising any of the other processes and going to somebody who would be cheaper but would eliminate these processes. And by respecting what they felt the couple wanted out of the transaction, they saved the transaction, they got great referrals from it, and the people loved them for it. And they made a lot of money from the transaction.
Wow. Well, Jay, it's been great talking to you. Do you give assignments here in the next month?
I think the assignment that I would give everyone in the next month is to take the elements that we shared in this session and apply it for at least one solid week to every customer you come in contact with, every supplier you deal with, every employee or employer or coworker or colleague or associate you deal with, and definitely apply it in your personal life. And then send me a letter or send my publisher a letter and tell me what the outcome was. I think you won't believe the improvement, the profound impact it will have on the success you'll realize.
And I think maybe you answered the question I'm about to ask you earlier, and that is, how do you communicate this to your friends, loved ones, and coworkers? And you're suggesting, after listening to The Edge five times, then passing it along.
Well, you can, but it's for their insight. The people are saying, well, how do I get started? You get started naturally from a point of looking at people. When you change and transform the strategy of your life and the purpose, and you start looking at your purpose as being to enhance people's lives, it's automatic, Marty. It's no big problem. You have to sit and worry, how can I start? Will I get started? You get started. Does that make sense? It just happens.
We're just about out of time. One sentence to summarize. Jay Abraham, the Wizard's Edge, the marketing genius. If you could summarize Jay Abraham in a sentence, what would it be?
It would be hopefully one of the most proficient creators of value for others.
One of the most proficient creators of value for others. Terrific. Jay Abraham, thank you.
Thanks, Marty.
You've been listening to The Wizard's Edge with Jay Abraham. Thanks for listening. This is Marty Stacey, Communications.